Arjuna to remember him. And remembering Krishna is actually the essence of all sadhana. Of all the practices of Krishna consciousness, the essence of them and the purpose behind them is to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. So this is so difficult to do as we live in the material world. Instead of seeing Krishna, we look and we see bodies, we see hair, we see sky, we see wood, we see brick, concrete, we see pigs, we see the ground, the grass, we see the sun, but we don't see Krishna. And therefore, we're in Maya. Because Krishna, everything has their source in Krishna. So to teach us actually the art of connecting everything with Krishna, in our consciousness, everything actually has a connection with Krishna because Krishna is Sarva Karana Karanam. So by definition, Krishna is the source of everything. If he's the cause of all causes, that means he's the source of everything. But we do not see that due to Maya. Maya means is not. Maya covers our vision. Maya covers our heart. Maya covers us completely. And what does it cover us with? Ignorance. And the basis, or the basic ignorance that Maya covers us with is the identification with the material body, with this body. And I think this is me. This is the basic ignorance. And with this body, I make all my attempts to enjoy myself on the subtle and gross levels. This is called ignorance, or Maya. And regardless of how I try to enjoy myself, all my attempts fail. So to crack this ignorance, Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita how we see everything in relationship to Him. Bhumi upon alovayu kramano buddha eva cha ahamkarai kiname vina prasutamastha aparya yam tatpanam prapiti vidi me param jiva bhuta maho darite yudete darite jara. That how everything that we can see, everything from this to this to this to this to this to this, this is just different combinations of the living entity, the soul, and Krishna's Vina property, or separated material energy. Just different combinations of that. And he teaches that, Krishna also teaches that he is the beginning and the end and middle of all living entities. Mata parataram na anya kinjirati. That Krishna is behind everything, just as the thread is behind the counterbeads, although we cannot see it. Or the sutre maniginayiva, the thread is behind the pearls of a necklace. We cannot see that thread, but yet it is that thread that holds everything together. And that thread throughout all reality is Krishna. So in the seventh chapter, Krishna has explained how he is the source of everything. And he's given us knowledge, transcendental knowledge, so we can see him everywhere we look. Sava vidhi nisheda cha etya eva kinkara. And this is the essence of all the rules and regulations that we follow. From getting up in the morning, to chanting during the day, to the preaching that we do, to the deity worship that we do, to the actually everything, all the prescribed duties, all the rules and regulations, they actually have a purpose. And that purpose is to always remember Krishna and never forget Him. This is the essence of all the rules and regulations. And all the rules and regulations are simply servants to that main rule and regulation. So Krishna explained this in the seventh chapter. Then in the eighth chapter, Krishna explained a very important question, the answer to a very important question. How can we remember Krishna? Because that's the essence. At the time of death, because then at the time of death, everything is tested. In the ninth chapter, Krishna explains many, many things. And then in the end of the ninth chapter, Krishna explains the special mercy of his dealings with the devotees and why we should worship him as opposed to worshiping the demigods, as opposed to worshiping the impersonal Brahman, opposed to worshiping anything. We should worship Krishna because Krishna takes special care of his devotees, and this is described in the end of chapter 9. And that very, very special section, which is the most intimate part of the entire Bhagavad Gita. It is exactly right in the middle of the Bhagavad Gita. At the end, between 9 and 10, there are 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. And the very middle, the essence, the heart, the core of the Bhagavad Gita is this last part of the ninth chapter. And also, in the same way, the beginning of the 10th chapter. So we're going to just, even though we're going to read from the 10th chapter today, and I'll give you a sheet of paper when we leave that will explain what sections we're going to read from now to the end. A lot of the devotees and their responses mentioned that would be nice. We hope. So we've prepared that for the remainder of the course. So although we're doing the beginning of the 10th chapter today, we're going to do the end of the ninth chapter tomorrow, and hear how Krishna reciprocates with his devotees, and about that the special sweetness of the contract in the relationship if someone becomes a devotee. But now, in the beginning of the tenth chapter, Krishna is going to describe his opulences, and this chapter is called Vibhuti Yoga, or the opulences of the Absolute. And in this beginning, and we'll go to the, we'll read until the 11th verse of the Bhagavad Gita, of this chapter. And these four verses, 8, 9, 10, and 11, are Chaturshloki Bhagavad Gita. They're the essence of the Bhagavad Gita in four slokas. So we're going to read that, and that, and we'll taste that essence. But first, Krishna explains in the first verse of the 10th chapter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Listen again, O mighty Lord Arjuna, because you are my dear friend, and for your benefit, I shall speak to you further, giving knowledge that is better than what I have already explained." Because in previous chapters, Krishna has explained his energies, his potencies. But here, Krishna is going to explain in that Chaturshloki Bhagavad Gita, he's going to explain, and also later on, his opulence. Because if we hear of the opulence of Krishna, if we are not envious, we will realize that he is great, and we are tiny and insignificant. If we are envious, when we see someone who is great, we don't like that at all. And rather than appreciating his greatness and benefiting from his greatness, if we're envious, we will try to chop him down and make him appear smaller than us. That is envy. And therefore in the ninth chapter, and in many places in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "I am speaking this to you because you are not envious, anusuyavay." This envy, which is situated in our heart, is the essence of our material existence. We are envious of Krishna. We don't want to accept that we should surrender to him, that we are tiny and insignificant. It is the root of our false ego, that we are envious of Krishna. So Krishna is so kindly going here from his own mouth, going to speak of his own opulences. And as he says here, it is for Arjuna's good. He is not glorifying himself. As a mundane person likes to speak of his own glories, Krishna is not doing that. Because he's fixing Arjuna in his own opulences. And by Arjuna hearing of these opulences, he's going to be inspired to serve, just like when we have a friend and we love him very dearly. And then we hear that he's done this and blessing. He's got blessing. He has so much wealth. And he's so beautiful. And he has so many awards. And people are coming to him all the time. That simply increases our affection for our friend, even though we may not have known it before. So in order to increase Arjuna's affection and surrender and dependence on Krishna, Krishna is going to speak his opulence, this knowledge that is better than what he has already explained. And remember that the last chapter is entitled The Most Confidential Knowledge. So this knowledge is better than the most confidential knowledge. So how glorious is this knowledge? Verse 2. Neither the hosts of demigods, nor the great sages, nor my origin or opulence. For in every respect I am the source of the demigods and sages. So the demigods, who are so powerful, they cannot understand Krishna's opulence. Why? Because they are attached to matter. And as long as we are attached to matter, we cannot understand Krishna in full and in truth. What to speak of his source, which is actually impossible to understand. And the great sages, who are not attached to matter, they also cannot understand. So practically speaking, as we've mentioned in earlier classes, it's impossible to understand Krishna's opulences and source. Why? Because this material world is dark. And this transcendental knowledge is not born of the material world. It has to descend into the material world. And this is Krishna's special mercy. Through our speculation, through our guesswork, through our intelligence, through our own strength, through our good qualities, we cannot understand anything about Krishna. Even Lord Brahma, when he saw Krishna in Vrindavan, Krishna had just killed what demon? Anasura. Did you hear about that in Raghavir Prabhu's class? Yeah, today? Auspicious. So, he had just killed Agasura, and the soul, Agasura's soul, had waited outside, and Brahma saw this and merged into Krishna's body, transcendental body. And Brahma was amazed, and he was looking at Krishna, and Krishna was just a young boy, and he was holding in his left, not even in his right hand, but in his left hand, he was holding some yogurt and fruit mixed together, like such an uncultured fellow, with some peacock feather in his hair and a flute and a buffalo horn and a rope, playing with his friends, just a little boy. How is that possible that he is the Supreme Personality of God? So Brahma even became bewildered. And the more he tried to test Krishna, the more bewildered he became. Because one cannot understand Krishna except by Krishna's mercy. So therefore, this Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's mercy. And somehow or another, if we can obtain Krishna's mercy, then and only then we actually understand Krishna. There is nothing that we can do to understand Krishna, no matter how intelligent, no matter how we try to understand, we study one verse and look at this word and squeeze it and twist it and try to be clever and see this contradiction with this. And we can drive ourselves crazy like that, but we will never understand Krishna until he decides to reveal himself. He has decided to reveal himself through the Bhagavad Gita, through the Srimad Bhagavatam, through the sadhus, the devotees, so many devotees preach all over the world, and their business is to reveal Krishna. And where are they getting this knowledge of Krishna from? Because it cannot exist in the material world, they are getting it from Krishna. Through Guru Parampara, Imam Parampara. There is no other way that we can understand. So we've discussed that section. So Krishna is explaining here that just like the child cannot understand the birth of his own father. Why? Because his father is his source. How can he understand something that existed prior to his remembrance. So similarly, no living entity, unless Krishna reveals it, can understand anything about Krishna. So this is the process. To hear from Krishna, or hear from those who heard from Krishna, through parampara. So Krishna is going to explain something about himself. In what chapter did Krishna explain some transcendental knowledge about himself? What did he explain in the fourth chapter? What's the Ajo? What is Ajo?
Unborn.
Unborn. So he's going to say that again. So his Krishna, his body is spiritual. Even though he's playing with his friends, he doesn't have a body like we have a body. His body is composed of Satchitananda. So much potency. And that's actually what Brahma realized. That there's so much difference. Even though Brahma had created the entire universe, there was so much difference in the potency between Krishna's transcendental body and his body that it was inestimable. He couldn't even estimate the difference in the potency. So Krishna is going to explain something about himself here. Yomam ajam anadim cha veti lokamahishvaram asamudha samurteshu sattva-kapaya kamuchyate. So Yomam, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he explains in his commentary that Krishna takes his finger and points to his own chest because he is a person. Says, Yo Mam, anyone who knows me, not the unborn, unmanifest within Krishna, but himself, this Krishna, who has no, there is no difference between him inside and outside, that Krishna, he's pointing to himself, Yo Mam, Ajam, anyone who knows me, is unborn. So he's already said, Ajopi Sam Ajayama. I am unborn. But here he's saying it again. I am unborn, Ajam. But someone may say that Brahma is also Aja. And not only is Brahma, practically all the sages are Aja, and every soul is Aja. But no one is the next word, Anadim. Anadi means without ultimate beginning and the source of everyone. The demigods may be Veti Loka Maheshwaram. The demigods may be Loka Maheshwaram, the controllers of all the planets, but they are not Anadi. It's only Krishna. Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karana. He is the original, beginningless source, and everyone has their beginning in him. So he who knows me as the unborn, as the beginningless, as the supreme lord of all the worlds, he only, undiluted among men, is free from all sins. So this Krishna has explained in the fourth chapter, Janma Karma Jame Divyam Evam Yogati Tatraha Takvidayam Panarajayman Naikimam Evam. This is the process of becoming liberated from the material world, getting out of the material world, is knowing Krishna's position and knowing Krishna's activities. And if we actually know them, then we can remember them, and then we can become free from all material encumbrances. This is the process. So therefore, we have to hear about Krishna. If we don't hear about Krishna, and this we'll learn very quickly, so this is actually the secret. This is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. To become Krishna conscious means to take a cotton swab, even though the cotton swab is white color, if you dip it into red ink, it becomes red. It has to become saturated with red ink. So similarly, our consciousness is absorbent, like white cotton. And if we keep always absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and I heard Prabhupada say this, long, long time ago, and it was actually in New Vrindavan, Subhayagriva. He said, the secret, and Brahmanandi, he said, the secret of Krishna consciousness is to mold your day in such a way that you cannot forget Krishna. And then he asked Brahmananda, is that difficult? And Brahmananda said, no, Prabhupada, we've already learned how to do that. But unfortunately, Maya is very clever and has a way to, for all of us, to try to separate us from remembering Krishna. So therefore it's so important that we understand that remembering Krishna, his name, his qualities, his form, his pastimes, this is the essence of Krishna consciousness. Even though we may have to work all day long, this is still the essence of Krishna consciousness, remembering Krishna. That's why the best kind of work is preaching. Why? Because we can preach directly about Krishna. We can talk about Krishna, we can say, you take this book, it is so wonderful, it tells about Krishna, it tells about Krishna's form, who is Krishna, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, etc., etc., etc. And here are the pictures in the book, and here they describe all the pictures, and preach, and preach, and preach, and preach. And that way, everything gets accomplished. And if we are in a position like Arjuna, who is not preaching, or his preaching is shooting arrows, and if he takes out his japa beads in the middle of the battlefield and starts chanting his rounds, he's going to get his head chopped off. He can't remember Krishna that way. But he's very fortunate, because first of all, he's seeing Krishna right in front of him as Krishna is driving his chariot. And actually, Bhishma said that I was more fortunate than Arjuna, because Arjuna could only see Krishna from the back. But when I was fighting with Krishna, I was seeing him from the front, and seeing his lotus eyes, his lotus mouth, and beautiful, the dust was so beautiful on his skin, and the perspiration. But if one is performing a duty where one can't remember Krishna all the time, one should always think that I'm engaged in this service by Krishna, which is described in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And give all the fruit to Krishna. I'm doing this for Krishna. I'm working, I have a job, I'm making money. So I'm working for Krishna, even though it may be difficult to remember Krishna. But the perfection of Krishna consciousness, Smartavya Satyatam Vishnu is Smartavya Vishnu. So always remember Krishna. Manmana Baba Manmato. Always remember me. Then, one who knows me like this becomes undiluted and free from sins. Now Krishna in text 4 and 5 is going to mention many qualities which are glorious qualities, which are qualities that are helpful in elevating ourselves. But these qualities, as Krishna says, are created by me alone. Intelligence, knowledge, they're glorious. Freedom from doubt and delusion. Forgiveness. This forgiveness is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, is being the distinguishing quality of a Brahmana, that he's forgiving. What would make a Brahmana forgiving? We already learned this in the 5th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. What would make a Brahmana forgiving?
He sees all the things.
Yeah, but what is that equal vision that is Pandita Samadarshana? What is that equal vision? Right, but what is it, but he sees them equally, but what is the equality that he sees in them? Yeah.
He sees the soul, so if someone does something bad, he knows that's because they're under the, they're covered over by the modes of material nature.
Yes, and who are the modes of material nature on them?
That's not bad.
But who are the modes of material nature on them?
Super soul.
So because everyone is under the modes of material nature, the modes of material nature are controlled by the super soul. Therefore, if someone slaps me, it could not have happened unless Krishna sanctioned it. So therefore, everything is under the control of Krishna. So if I'm going to become angry at anyone, I should become angry at Krishna for doing this, and that we don't do. We don't get angry at Krishna. So therefore, we cannot get angry at anyone else, so therefore we have to forgive others. And the difficulty is, in the material world, how entangling it is, that someone slaps us, and what do we want to do? Not slap them back. Not for a slap, we want to cut their head off. We want to slap them if they bump into us. But if they slap us, we want to... He will see my power, he will know who I am. So the difficulty is that when someone does something to us, it makes such a sanskara in the heart, it makes such an impression. Like the heart is like clay. And when there's, if this was clay here, and I went like this, my fingerprints would be in there. So similarly, my everyone's handprints come into our consciousness, especially if someone hurts us. If we love someone also, but even more than that, when someone hurts us, when we hate them, so we get these impressions in our heart, and all we can think about is them all day long, like Kamsa and Sisupala, only thinking about Krishna. So the difficulty is, these sanskaras in our heart, they will stay in our heart, because they are not in our physical heart. They are in the subtle body, the chitta. They stay in the chitta. And then, in our next life, we will carry that impression. And then we will have to get even with it. And then, because we have gotten even with them, they are angry at us. And therefore, in the next life, they have to get even with them. And then for hundreds of lives, just back and forth, hurting people. So therefore, a brahmana, due to the mode of goodness and his absence of the mode of passion, he learns the art of accepting tatenu kampam sisimikshamano bhunte papati pavakam. That Krishna has done this. It's my karma. And Krishna has minimized it. So I'm sinning Krishna's mercy. Divityo mukti pade sudayabhava. That a person who learns to see like that, he is eligible for liberation because he is not in the material world. Why? Because he's seeing Krishna everywhere. When something good happens to him, he sees Krishna. And when something bad happens to him, he sees Krishna. Krishna's mercy everywhere. Never thinking, I don't deserve it. This is my fault. That I think when something bad happens to me, that I don't deserve it. When I think when something good happens to me, I think I deserve it better. This is my fault. So this fault will keep me in the material world forever. So all these qualities, forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the senses, these are exalted qualities. They are not Krishna consciousness, but they're exalted sub-religious principles that one practically cannot be Krishna conscious without these principles. They're so glorious. Control of the mind, happiness and distress, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, non-violence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame and infamy. All these various qualities of living qualities of the living beings are created by me alone. Krishna's explaining this, so we understand that these qualities, since they're created by Krishna, as the sages and demigods are created by Krishna, they cannot help us understand Krishna in and of themselves. We have to hear from Krishna if we want to actually understand Krishna. The seven great sages, and before them, the four other great sages, and the Manus, these are some of the most exalted living entities in this age, they come from me, born from my mind, and all the living beings populating the various planets descend from them. So one can't understand Krishna by one's own power, because by the powers of our friends, by the powers of the sages, the demigods, there is only one way that one can understand. If we hear from someone who has heard from Krishna or hear from Krishna directly, one who is factually convinced of this opulence, that Krishna is achintya. What does achintya mean? What does achintya mean?
Inconceivable.
What does inconceivable mean?
Which cannot be guessed by the senses.
Yes, yes, that's why inconceivable is the wrong word. We use achintya, inconceivable. But what is inconceivable? Just what Krishna is saying, that we cannot conceive of Krishna's position, his potency, his relationship with his energies, etc. Of course, we cannot conceive of it in totality, but we cannot conceive it unless we hear it from the disciplic succession. So therefore, that really shows how we have to hear. And we just have to hear with a peaceful, faithful heart. And that is so difficult about Kali Yuga. Because in Kali Yuga, if you have faith, practically you're a fool. Because everyone is a cheater in Kali Yuga. And yet, within this horrible realm of Kali Yuga, which is dark, which is cheating, mandasu manda matayo manda bhagya upadrutaha, where everyone's mind is so disturbed, and that is the prime quality of Kali Yuga, is everyone's mind is disturbed. Because there are there's so much passion and ignorance and agitation everywhere. It is so horrible, there's so much corruption, cheating, etc. Everyone's mind is disturbed. And therefore everyone has a good reason why not to accept anyone faithfully, accept anyone with authority, except there's only one reason why we should. Despite all the bad reasons, there's one reason why we should. And that is, if we don't, Krishna will not give us any mercy. And if we are sincere and surrender and have faith, He will protect us despite everything. But it's so difficult to tell you. It's so difficult. Faith is such a rare commodity in Kali Yuga. And someone worthy of having our faith is so rare also. But we need, without faith, we'll die. Our spiritual life will die. So Krishna is saying, one who is convinced of this opulence of mind, and mystic powers of mind, of this position, as beyond our ability to understand, what does he do? He engages in unalloyed devotional service. What does unalloyed devotional service mean? It means serving Krishna without any other desire. Anyavilasita sunyam yanakama anavrita anukulena krishna anushilanam bhakti uttama. That is to the Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional service. Kevala bhakti. Pure, unadulterated devotional service. That means it's service just trying to give to Krishna, not wanting to take anything in return. Very, very, very difficult. Very difficult. That our pleasure is nothing but the pleasure of Krishna and Krishna's devotion.
That is pure devotional service.
And the prime example of pure devotees are the residents of Vrindavan. Even though the gopis of Vrindavan would dress themselves beautifully, but it wasn't for any other reason than to make Krishna smile and give Krishna pleasure. The coward boys, when they told Krishna and Balaram, "Oh, Krishna and Balaram, it's already late in the morning, and we're so hungry. Where can we get something to eat?" So what were they really thinking? What were they really thinking?
That Krishna's
hungry. But because they don't have to proper etiquette, they won't speak, "Oh Krishna, you're hungry, let's get something, we should get you something to eat." Because then what will they say? Just like if you come to my room and I say, "Oh, I'm going to go out and buy some mangoes for you to eat. Then you'll say, no, I'm not hungry. But if I say, oh, I'm going to go buy some mangoes for my deity right now, and I'm going to offer it to my deity, then you'll say, oh, very nice. So this is the nature of the very sweet and subtle dealings. So that is devotional service. Everything for Krishna. For Krishna's pleasure. And to do that, one has to love Krishna. So after explaining that one who understands this opulence and position of Krishna engages in devotional service, that there is no doubt of this. Because this is what understanding means. It is not theoretical understanding, but it means that you surrender to Krishna the way Krishna wants. You act in such a way, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, act in such a way, not that we try and see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will see us. Because we cannot attain Krishna by our own power. But if Krishna wants, very easy for him to give us everything. So now, Krishna is going to explain. Stand it again. I still have the lights, but I can put on the light over here. I can't check. These four verses are very, very important. How many of you know these four verses? Beginning with the Hamsa Bhakti Prabhupada. Oh, everyone should learn these four verses. Maybe I should ask them on the test, but everyone has to know them. Do you know them? You should learn them. Okay? Should I ask them on the test? Will that help me?
Which numbers?
Huh? 8, 9, 10, and 11 in chapter 7. Aham savasya prabhavo matak savam pravartate iti matva prajante nam buddha bhava savanata. Aham savasya prabhavo matak savam pravartate, that everything comes from me. I am the source of everything. And that includes, as Prabhupada translates it, the spiritual and material worlds both. Krishna has said in the 7th chapter that he is the source of the material world, all the material energy, gross and subtle. And he said that he's the source of the Kshetragya, the soul, Jiva Bhuta Mahabaho. But here he's saying that he's the source of the spiritual world also. The material world, the spiritual, everything is coming from Krishna. And yet, he's in Vrindavan, playing with his cowherd boyfriends. That is amazing, to think about it. That he could, just imagine if you could do anything you wanted. If you had all the power that existed, the totality of power. Now when the Christians imagine what God is like, what do? They imagine who is the most, they put him on a big throne with a big crown and sometimes a scepter in his hand, a stick like that. But of course they never give him a face.
World's largest bakery.
Yeah,
because he's giving everybody their daily bread.
Yeah, but he's also frying everyone, so that's more than big. So I once heard from Rita Andermark something really funny. They say that when they show God, they don't show him never as a young boy or anything. When they show him, how old do they show him? He's old, right? Not 40. He's like between, he's like 70 to 80, somewhere between 70 and 80, right? But after all, he's not 70 or 80. He's more than 70 or 80 years old. Because he's beginningless, right? So he's billions and billions and billions and billions of years old. So according to them, he stops aging when he's 70 to 80. So if you can stop aging, why stop at 70 to 80? Why not stop when you're 16? As long as the principle is stopping your aging. Ah, that's an enlightening state. So if you can stop, you might as well stop when you're before you're an old man. So Krishna is the source of everything, of all power. Though iti matva, thus knowing this, what does someone do who actually knows this? Bhajante mam. Serves Krishna. Buddha Bhava Samita with great attention and great affection. Being careful to do everything that will please Krishna. That is what great attention and great affection means. To do it in such a way that it will please Krishna exactly the way he wants it. That is bhakti. That is bhava. That is Buddha Bhava Samanita. And this, if we understand this principle in dealing with our spiritual master, in dealing with Srila Prabhupada, in dealing with the deities, in dealing with the devotees, if we understand this one principle, our whole life will be so nice. It will be automatically, everything will be just right. We'll know just how to act. If we just do everything that we do with great attention so that Krishna will be pleased. And what stops us from acting like that? We don't want to please Krishna. That is the problem. One time I was talking to one of the sadhus in Vrindavan. Actually, it was a bit. Actually, it was nothing to my wife. She went to see one sadhu. And the sadhu said, "So how is your bhajan?" And it's like when someone says, "How are you today?" You never say, "Oh, my knee hurts and my head hurts and this hurts and that hurts." You say, "Oh, very well. And you?" So she said, "Oh, very well. My bhajan is fine. And how is yours?" Insincerity. That is the only cause of all problems. And it's so easy to see everyone else's insincerity. But I don't know where I first heard this, but when you're pointing one finger at someone else, you're pointing three at yourself. Yeah? Very difficult to see our own position. Therefore, the pure devotees are very humble. Iti matva bhajante mam. So people who actually know Krishna's position as he's describing it, who actually know it, who bhajante, they worship Krishna. They'll learn it, because this is the end of knowledge. And they worship him with great attention and great, great, great love. It is natural, actually, to worship the great and the powerful. And this is how Krishna's explaining himself at this point. I am the source of all the spiritual material worlds. And here Krishna is saying that he is Swayam Bhagavan. He is the source. And Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. That he is the source of all, of everything. Of everything. And this is Krishna. He is our Lord. Everything emanates from him. From me, Krishna said. The wise who perfectly know this, engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So first is the knowledge, and then the characteristics of pure devotional service. With all their hearts, giving everything to Krishna for his pleasure. Second verse. The next verse explains the activities of such devotees. Because it says, bhajante mam. So they do bhajan to Krishna. They worship and serve Krishna. What is the nature of their bhajan? What is their bhajan? This is the definition of bhajan. Madhita madgata prana goriyantas paraspara katayantas jamam nityam kashyanti chavaramantara. And the result of bhajan. Madhita, this is the first thing again, that the minds are the chitta, or consciousness of minds are focused on Krishna. So sometimes when we do service, especially when we manage in this time, there's so much anxiety. But that anxiety, as Prabhupada would call it, is transcendental anxiety. If we're doing it for Krishna, for His pleasure, then because then our pleasure is focused on and the art of pleasing Krishna is pleasing Krishna's devotees, especially spiritual master. And all the Vaishnavas, when we say especially pleasing the spiritual master, we also know that what pleases the spiritual master. Sometimes very young devotees, they want to have the ghee lamp in their hand as an example, and their spiritual master is there. And they'll knock everyone down, please that, offend everyone else in the entire universe. But would that please the spiritual master? Of course not. He doesn't understand anything. So that's typical, though, of a young immature devotee. And even that, because the elements of sincerity in that, we have to learn what actually pleases Krishna and the spiritual master is when we become the servant of the Vaishnavas and please the Vaishnavas. So Machita Madgata Prana Boreantas Paraspara. Boreantas is preaching paraspara amongst themselves. So mindfully absorbed in Krishna, life given to Krishna, preaching amongst the devotees, amongst the non-devotees. Katyantas means always speaking Krishna Katha. And this is very difficult. The cotton swab of our chitta or consciousness has to be read with Krishna Katha. In other words, we have to have heard Krishna Katha a lot and always be desiring this. And this is actually Krishna's mercy. This is the result. Shushu Shoshadanasya Vasudeva Katharuchi Syan Mahasivaya Vipro Punya Dhikana Sevana. The result of all the service that we do is we develop a deep taste for Krishna Katha. And just like the fish cannot live without water, exalted devotees cannot live without Krishna Katha, and that's all they want. Sometimes devotees would go into Prabhupada's room. In fact, sometimes he would call devotees into his room and say, see what I'm doing when I'm not busy with other things? I'm reading Krishna books. Not artificial. The natural taste develops through service. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss. This is the result, dasyanti charamandika, from enlightening one another and conversing about me. This is called istagosti. Istagosti means talking around, all around the topics about istadeva, our worshipable deity. All the Krishna Katha, talking everything about different subjects about Krishna. That is istagosti. In the early days of the movement, I remember 26 Second Avenue, on Sunday, we would lock the door, pull down the blinds and the curtains, and then have a istagosti. And it would usually open, we'd read some Bhagavad Gita, or Bhagavatam actually, and all the devotees would discuss the topic. Because it's hearing about Krishna. Hearing and realizing, because see, what is the result of sinful acts, of sin? Sin means anartha, things that are anartha, of no value. So when light replaces the darkness, when things are valued, you cannot keep
keep in your mind your two contradictory things. So by the potency of good, powerful hearing of the knowledge about Krishna, our valuing material life naturally increases, just naturally. The more we value service to Krishna, just naturally, the less we're going to value temporary things.
So when it says,
and that's Krishna's mercy, how he does that.
When it says sins here, he means the simple desires within the heart rather than previous sins committed in the past.
No, everything happens.
So how does he...
There's four different levels of sins.
How does it treat?
Bhuta, Bija, Parapta, Aparapta. One is the unlimited stuff that we have in our heart from time immemorial. And Kuta is our allotment for this life. And Bija is the desires as they're coming out. And Parabdha is the fullness of the manifestation. Devotion annihilates. This is described. Shinbitam Svakata Krishna Tamishavadrani. And when we become eager to hear Krishna personally from within the heart, the Guru, the Abhadrani, inauspiciousness, which is an artha, which is all these different levels. Initiation brings us to initiation. Initiation annihilates. Brings us to see the deities. Brings us to chant the holy names. It brings us to give in charity. It brings us to bow down before the deities, before the devotees. It brings us to put tilak on. The knowledge brings us to pure activity.
In the beginning we said that Krishna's opulences. Yeah, but it means we should not tell people in the beginning that they should read Bhagavad Gita. Because if they read Bhagavad Gita, and if they are not a friend of Krishna, then by, it's like somebody is not my friend, and I start telling, I've got a plan here, I've got a car here, I've got a
plan.
So if we tell people to read Bhagavad Gita,
except Prabhupada's purports are like a hammer. And they smash that and they point it out for what it is. And therefore, Prabhupada wanted his things to be in his books to everyone. Even Bhagavad Gita, which is in one sense meant for the devotee. This question is actually explained in the 18th chapter, where Krishna says he who explains the secret to the devotees, devotional service is guaranteed. And Prabhupada asks the question, why is it that sometimes we hold open classes then? So there's two reasons. One is you never know who is a devotee, because sometimes you give someone the Bhagavad Gita, and that person is just making believe he's asleep somewhere, and he just wakes right up. He was just waiting to hear this transcendental sound vibration. And then on the other hand, it's in and of itself, it's purifying. Just to hear Sri Bhagavan Vaja, to hear that the supreme, that there is a Supreme Personality of God, especially in India, where the Krishna consciousness is just so much close to the surface. But even all over the world, looks like Sachinandana Swami wrote me a letter one time and said that the devotees were distributing books in Yugoslavia, fighting there and all that. Taking such great risks, actually incredible. And he received a letter from a taxi driver in, what's the name of that, Sarvajaya or whatever it is. Yes, so he received a letter from a taxi driver in that city who was a member of the minority group because it's divided and they're killing, it's the most inhuman, cruel killing going on. So he was a member of the minority group there and he was a taxi driver and he had a fight with one of the other taxi drivers and they turned him into the police and said that he was a spy. And those people at this time, they have not the slightest compunction about killing. So the secret police came to his house and arrested he and 5 other taxi drivers. And they began to torture him. But somehow or another, he had received the Bhagavad Gita. And he remembered Krishna. And he had read part of it. And he remembered either Krishna or the Mahamantra or something like that. Just some taxi driver in the middle of Yugoslavia. Somehow or another, he remembered it. And he called out to Krishna while they were torturing him. And they ended up letting him go. And they didn't completely let him go, they just punished him by all the other people that were with him and killed, and he had to dig graves. That was his only punishment. So he wrote him saying, Krishna. Also, I remember when I was in Hong Kong, there was this one Chinese boy who was preaching to him, he was a Christian. So he was always being attacked by ghosts. And he said, whenever I chant Lord Jesus' name, the ghosts still bother me. But when I chant Krishna's name, they never bother me. So anyway, who knows how Krishna's name and Krishna's potency works? My realization about that, our business isn't so much the results about who is going to take it and what's going to happen. Our business is to loudly call out Krishna's name in all the different forms and spread it as wide as possible between the books and the holy name and the prasadam. And how people react to that is up to Krishna and them. That's my... Just one more question.
It's a lot more exactly to the topic of today's topic. In fourth chapter, Krishna is telling Arjuna that this knowledge was coming in an unbroken chain and it was lost. He was revealing it to him again because he was devoting. So we just want to know where this Arjuna relates now from according to and any specific successions from Arjuna or
Vyasadeva picked up
from
the Bhagavad Gita. Vyasadeva. But he is, you know, in a simple succession. He put it into the Mahabharata.
Arjuna did not start any succession. Arjuna did not start in any succession.
But Krishna made sure that the other day picked it up. He was telling him this knowledge for the purpose of, for the benefit of everyone. Yeah, I should have broken my eyes.